This is a book club edition of Ozarks at Large. John Holmans is the executive editor of New York Magazine, a post he's held since 1994. He had previously worked at Esquire, Details, Harper's, and the New York Observer. He lives in Manhattan, and he says the last thing he thought he would have written about for his first full-length nonfiction book, dogs. But that's just what he did. What's a dog for? The surprising history, science, philosophy, and politics of man's best friend is John Holman's first book. Recently, I talked to him about the work. He says that there is a lot of science that goes into studying the behavior of dogs. He says there's even new research into the evolution of dogs and how they became domesticated.
The reigning theory of dog evolution was that the wolves that became dogs were wolves that lost their fear of humans, or wolves that important concept is flight distance, that would allow humans to come closer without running away, and that enabled them to get the mammoth bones or whatever, what have you, reindeer bones or whatever they happened to be hunting. So they hung out and waited. They probably helped hunt too, and Stella is, she would have been fantastic at that primitive activity.
Stella, of course, your dog, a lab.
A lab mix.
And at one point, you point out that the lab is like the kid who waits to be called on, as opposed to the border collie, who is the know-it-all kid who can't
Absolutely.
Wait to show you.
I think that's what the English noblemen, the dukes and such, very rich English people that bred the lab, like about the lab is that it's a little more unassuming and not as obsessive as a border collie, even though border collies are really very bright. I hope Stella doesn't hear this, but I think the border collies are a little brighter than Stella, maybe.
The subtitle of the book is The Surprising History, Science, Philosophy, and Politics of Man's Best Friend. So you think, I think many people know of Darwin's love and interest in dogs, but the names that come in here, not just Darwin, but Jane Goodall, Pavlov, of course, B.F. Skinner, Noam Chomsky is mentioned in relation.
Well, the most interesting thing I found, and I was delighted to discover this, and people knew, of course, that Jane Goodall was interested in her dogs, but science had moved away from thinking animals were very intelligent at all for ever since the scientists right after Darwin. And then it was Jane Goodall that began to think again about what animal intelligence might be. And just as for Darwin, Jane Goodall was inspired by her dog named Rusty, a very bright little dog that she called. She treated him like a person, and she thought he was a person, and she thought that she had this whole quiver of human-like intelligence and emotions. And that experience primed Jane Goodall to see what she saw in the chimps at Gombe, where she anthropomorphized them, and she saw that they had these familial relationships, and she saw really how similar they were to humans. And it was a dog, just as for Darwin, it was a dog that kind of catalyzed that insight. And I find that really fascinating. And dogs are still a lot. Then I wrote about some scientists who are now primate scientists who are trying to find out how humans evolved from primates. And the dog it provides an example in that the tameness of the dog seems to have equipped it to better communicate with humans. And these scientists, Michael Hare and Mike Tomasello, think that humans must have become tame in a similar way. For instance, to use language. It's an activity that requires tameness. It requires believing that another creature is going to help you and not compete with you. And that's something that humans have, and that's something that dogs have, and something that, although chimps are very intelligent, much more intelligent than dogs, a chimp can't understand pointing because a chimp is competitive. And so it's something we share with dogs, and it's part of what sort of underlies our relationship. The dog is ready to be helped.
Well, and you discuss in the book, What's a Dog For?
the idea whether dogs have shame or guilt. Dog owners think they do, right? We're familiar with that pose.
Dog owners think they do, and most scientists think that they don't. But what they do have is they have a kind of armature of this. They have a primitive version of something that can be called shame. They know when they may get punished, and they display the characteristics that you'd say are shameful, which is why they think they're shame. But it's more, they probably don't have the insight that they've done a fully developed insight that they've done something that they should be ashamed of. They simply know that this outcome may produce the knocked over trash may produce this outcome, and so they better put their head down and push their ears back. So it's simpler, but it's kind of on the road to into something that could be called shame, I would say.
There's an interesting bit in the book about oxytocin and how that molecule can be increased in humans when they're interacting with their dogs, especially if they're looking at their dogs.
Right. It's the basic. Well, oxytocin is, of course, incredibly important. It's the basic human bonding hormone. It's the hormone that's most important in a mother's relationship with her baby. It fills you with warmth and love for your closest family members. And interestingly, oxytocin tends to be prejudiced against people that aren't your family members. Some scientists have found petting a dog produces oxytocin in the same way that interacting with a spouse or a child does. And it's this basic, it creates the same kind of bond. So they're, on a chemical level, a dog and a person are kind of indistinguishable, which is interesting, and which is another reason why they fit into. I mean, it works with all pets, of course, but it's one reason why dogs fit so neatly into the human world.
Obviously, it's interesting what you write about dogs, but there's also much interesting about humans here, especially this scientific canine world that exists. It's a small world, people doing research. They know each other, and sometimes there are rivalries.
Sure. No, I'm writing about the debate over how, there's a big debate over, still a big debate over how smart animals are and what animal intelligence is and how it can be used to train animals. And it's very complicated, and there are people, there are generational differences. And the scientists I was just speaking about, the ones who are studying pointing, they've moderated some of their claims about animal intelligence, but they think that dogs are pretty special and bright, whereas an older generation, brilliant guy named Raymond Coppinger, who really devised the most elegant and I believe true and the reigning theory of how dogs evolve, which is that they domesticated themselves and weren't first kept as pets. But he tends to think that dogs are much more less intelligent and more instinctive creatures. And believes that there's a lot of sentimentalism in dog science. And I think this Brian Hare and Mike Tomasello, I don't think, are sentimentalists, but I think that there can be sentimentalism and wishful thinking about what dogs might be capable of. That the scientists have to be careful about letting that creep in.
Well, even if scientists can manage to remove sentimentalism about the research, often the press does not when reporting about the research.
No, I think that's true. I mean, I'm sure I myself will be accused of that, but that's okay. And I also think the other truth is about dogs that one wouldn't want to remove the sentimentalism in one's own relationship with one's dog, because that's part of the point. And that's why this is an interesting science, because there is this, we have our relationship with our dogs that are sentimental and that are involved in fantasy, and everyone, me included, talk to their dogs. and yet you want to try to figure out, and it's hard in that context to do science, because science demands more kind of clarity, and that's the fascinating thing about the science, is that you're working with this built-in issue.
And over the last centuries, dogs have become more family members than ever before, in the house, often allowed in the bed. We tend to have this odd paradox with our dogs. At one point, giving them credit for being smart, for doing perhaps something that isn't really that smart, but at the other time, concentrating on just how smart they're not.
Mm-hmm.
It's an odd relationship we have with our dogs sometimes.
No, it's true. It can include all those things, and that's part of why that's part of what it makes it complicated and interesting. I mean, the question of what's a dog for has a lot of answers, and sometimes, as you say, sometimes I'm just marveling at Stella's, at her incredible sensitivity to the natural world, and sometimes I'm saying, well, Stella, why don't you understand this simple thing? And making fun of her about it. So yeah, it's complicated and fun, and that's part of what makes the book fun. Is all this? And what makes this a relationship? Dogs are really mirrors of human concerns, and that's a big part of what the book is about. Is that the dog is part of? It's this really rich, ancient culture, our relationship with dogs, and that's what I found fascinating and contradictory and fascinating, and that's what is most interesting about my book, I think.
And finally, in the acknowledgments, you write that the secret of a dog is that it's ready to be helped, and that explains so much about the dogs we love.
No, that's the basic. It explains the science of pointing, and it's what chimpanzees can't do is be helped, and it explains the kinds of treats I'm giving, the piece of steak I'm slipping to Stella under the table when no one's watching. It's a big part of the story, and it's a lot of what people love to take, people need to take care of things, and if you don't have a child, a dog is a great thing, and even if you do. So, yeah, explains quite a bit.
The name of the book is What's a Dog For? The Surprising History, Science, Philosophy, and Politics of Man's Best Friend. John, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you.
John Holmans is the executive editor of New York Magazine. His book is What's a Dog For? The Surprising History, Science, Philosophy, and Politics of Man's Best Friend. Still to come on this book club edition of Ozarks at Large for the first day of 2013, Dr. Matthew Pate discusses the use of corporal punishment around the world. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.